I feel like fewer students nowadays are keen to intercalate, just because unless medical schools make it mandatory, where it is at some medical schools, other medical schools don't really enforce intercalation. So a lot of students don't do it simply because now it's not worth any more points when you apply for foundation program. And I think that's a massive opportunity missed for students, because it's really an opportunity for you to add another string to your bow.
You're listening to What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us, where we tackle pro financial tips for medical students and foundation year doctors, career ideas, and how to leverage your skills and time more effectively. Join us, and remember the golden rule: this podcast is for general information only and does not constitute any form of advice. Hi everyone, welcome back to What Medical School... God damn it. Hi everyone, welcome back to... We're off to a roaring start, ladies and gentlemen. Hi everyone, welcome back to What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us. My name's Matthew. I'm here with my co-host and good friend, Sunny. How are you doing, Sunny?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me. Well, it feels really weird to be the one in the hot chair today, but hello, everyone. How are you?
Yeah, you've been doing a lot of hosting recently, haven't you?
Not as much as I'd like to, but definitely. Yeah, but not today. Not today at all.
Not today. Mate, yeah, great to have you on. And so what we were thinking about today was, well, Sunny and I are both London rats now, and we thought it would be really good to actually just talk through what it's like, and more kind of broadly, excluding London, the benefits of intercalating from your degree, taking a year out. So, Sunny, what's your current situation? Talk us through.
Yeah, so a bit of background. I mean, all of you listening in probably already know I'm a medical student. I finished 3 years of my medical degree at Cardiff, but this year I've taken a year out of medicine to intercalate, which essentially means, I mean, I'm sure everyone listening knows, but it means you take a year out of medicine, so you take a break from medicine and you do something different, which could either be medical related or something, you know, completely different like I am. So I'm taking the year out to do the management course at Imperial College London, which means I'm based in London for the entire year rather than being back in Cardiff and doing medicine things. And yeah, it's been great so far. And well, we're going to dive more into why I feel more students should be intercalating, because I feel like fewer students nowadays are keen to intercalate, just because unless medical schools make it mandatory, where it is at some medical schools, other medical schools don't really enforce intercalation. So a lot of students don't do it simply because now it's not worth any more points when you apply for foundation program. And I think that's a massive opportunity missed for students, because it's really an opportunity for you to add another string to your bow.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, Sunny, everyone listening will also know I did a year abroad when I was at uni, obviously slightly different, but it was, I think it adds so much more character and depth compared to just your academic studies. And yeah, I had the personal chance to study way more than just my degree in economics. So, you know, it was really worth doing. And I guess, Sunny, were you drawn to London specifically, or did you not mind where you did it? Or was there something about London that you wanted to do at this time in your life?
Absolutely. So it wasn't necessarily London itself what I was drawn to. I think London was definitely a factor, but it wasn't the main factor. I think when you choose to intercalate, I think the course you decide to do should be the main driving factor, because that is work that you'll be doing for the entire year. So what I was particularly drawn to was the management course. And because it was hosted by Imperial and it was done in London, I think that was just an added like double bonus of being at Imperial, being in London, alongside the course that I wanted to do. So it was really sort of just a perfect trifecta almost of all three things happening together. Well, not necessarily London, but the course.
Yeah. We're going to get into London and the other benefits of intercalating and stuff, but I guess if we could take it back a bit before, what was the process? Like, how did you come about doing it? Was it quite a lot of admin work on the part of the university, or kind of how did it work for you?
So at Cardiff, you can either intercalate after third year or after fourth year, and you can choose when to intercalate. So actually, majority of students do choose to intercalate after fourth year, just because all of the finals are done and so on. And you can, you know, without having the pressures of medicine, you can go away and intercalate properly. I just decided to do it after third year because I personally, it made no difference to me having completed medical finals or not. And I was very keen, and I was just like, you know, this is my first opportunity. I'm going to try my best and I'm going to do it. So the process for me to personally apply from Cardiff was, Cardiff looked at my academic grades, and I also had to write a personal statement for the Cardiff University to like allow me to apply to Imperial. Following that, I did a bit of research looking at other courses apart from the management course at Imperial. So I looked at bioengineering at Imperial, bioengineering at UCL, and also global health. I think I actually looked at global health, which is very different from the other stuff. And I finally ended up applying for management at Imperial, with bioengineering at Imperial as my second choice, if I didn't get management, and bioengineering at UCL. And for both applications, I had to write a separate personal statement, attach my academic transcripts from previous 3 years of medicine, and also get a referee to write me a reference letter, essentially, and submit that individually to each university. And following that process, I was quite fortunate enough to get an offer from both Imperial for management and UCL for bioengineering. However, I chose to go with Imperial because that was obviously my first choice, and management is what I wanted to do. So it just made sense. It was kind of a no-brainer at that point. But yeah, so it was quite a long process. I think it took me about 3 or 4 months to just get through all of that admin work and just like making sure the letters and this that are submitted and chasing up referees, that kind of thing. But other than that, it was quite a smooth process. I mean, both universities had a very nice portal, very nice, you know, sort of defined method, like just written down steps, like, you know, you have to email here, you have to do that. So it's very clear to follow, easy to follow instructions, and yeah, quite straightforward.
That's brilliant. I mean, about outside of, I guess, the associated moving costs, was there any cost to yourself for, like, I don't know, an admin fee from the university? And actually, as a separate point, how do your tuition fees factor into that? Do you still pay full fare for this to the different university, or do you still pay to Cardiff? Do you know roughly how that works?
Absolutely. So in terms of applying to any of these universities, there's no cost attached. In terms of the tuition fees, you apply as normal. So I applied as normal to Student Finance Wales, and Student Finance Wales just pays the university you'll be at that for that academic year. So because this year I'm at Imperial, they'll pay Imperial only, because, you know, that's where my course is being run. Cardiff gets no money. So I'm technically, when I try to do anything, like if I try to go back to Cardiff and I try to do anything at Cardiff or like do any Cardiff work, actually they count me as like a suspended student, or like, and it's like as a student who's left. So my account doesn't actually fully function, like my Cardiff email address doesn't fully function, like I don't have access to everything. So it's quite restricted in that sense, like because they feel like you're not a Cardiff student right for that year. You're an Imperial student, so everything is Imperial based. Basically, there's no Cardiff stuff that you can access. I can't access like any of the modules and things being taught in year four medicine, basically. So very much that way. And in terms of the finances as well, all towards Imperial, nothing towards your originating university, which is a good way to put it, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And do you still get the same maintenance, or do you get London uplift at all, or is it still?
Yeah, so I think from London, you get a slight bit more. But it's not really that much. I mean, London costs are
eye-wateringly
high. That's correct. Yes, that's the word I was looking for. Eye-wateringly high. And it is just ridiculous living in London. And we're going to get onto this. But yeah, so you do get a slight, I mean, they kind of like, oh yeah, London's great. And you know, you get, they look at the pricing, but it's the same situation, just as if I was back in Cardiff, you know, it'd be the same sort of situation. Like, the costs are high, and if not higher in London, so yeah, I don't really think maintenance loan can necessarily fully cover that.
Yeah. And I guess, so we kind of, I think we talked a little bit about it earlier. For yourself and for more generally, what do you think the true value of intercalating is? Like, why? I know it's a shame that the points don't count anymore towards further down the line, because it, as I say, it adds so much, I don't know if we can call it intangible, but it builds so much character, it gives you so many more experiences and opportunities. But for yourself, and I guess for other medical students listening, what do you think the true benefit of it is?
Absolutely, you're right. I think, you know, and that's a good way to put it, I think intercalating, whilst it doesn't necessarily give you more points, I think a good way, or how I framed it in my head, is that it's kind of a free degree. And the way I look at it is because the NHS bursary pays for any tuition over 4 years. So they, if you do 5 years of medicine, they'll pay for that one extra year after fourth year. Or if you do 6 years of medicine, which is what I'll be doing because I've intercalated, they'll pay for those 2 years. So in a way, even though necessarily the maths doesn't quite add up because, you know, of when I'm intercalating and so on, it is kind of paid for in a way. And, you know, so in that sense, it's a free degree, one. Two, it adds, like you said, it adds to your character because you go out. I mean, you can choose to intercalate at your own university. So Cardiff offers actually a lot of degrees. It just didn't offer management, which is what I wanted to do. That's why I'm outside. So you could also choose to stay at your own university. But yeah, it adds that character. It adds skills. And it allows you to widen your network. So me being here in Imperial and meeting students at Imperial as well as other universities. So there's a lot of people. I believe there's 43 people from other universities, including myself, that are here doing the management course. So not only am I meeting 40 Imperial medics, I'm meeting 42 other people, external medics, which is what we're classed as well as 80 students from Imperial who are doing something called joint honours, which is like chemistry and management, or biology and management, or biomed and management, exactly. So it's a really diverse cohort, and you meet so many new people, and you interact with so many new people, and you those ideas in the room, that's when like sparks start to fly, right? You're in that room filled with people from different backgrounds, doing different things, and from different locations in some aspect. And that's why it's just a brilliant opportunity. And you should definitely choose to intercalate, because and I don't necessarily have to go forward and use management in the future, but just having met all of those people, I think that there's incredible value attached to that in itself. And living in London and grasping all the opportunities in London, there is a value attached to that in itself, which I wouldn't be able to access in Cardiff, right? So it gives you that added string to your bow, which I've already mentioned, and it just broadens your horizon, which is otherwise not really possible in medicine, because medicine is very, it's just like a vertical line straight down, and you just go from A to Z without a break. And intercalation gives you that break that you need in the middle of your degree.
Yeah, well put. So Stanley, I had a couple of other questions. So firstly, I know you said you kind of get a free degree, what qualification do you get? Is it like a certificate of higher learning? And also, you know, what do you think you can do with it in general? What can people do with this intercalating degree?
Yeah, no, brilliant question. I think that often stumps people. So, well, latter question definitely does. So firstly, this is a full degree. So it's essentially doing like a 3-year course in 1 year. So when I come out of this, I'll come out with a degree, which is a Bachelor of Science in Medical Sciences with Management. So it's a full degree, counts, you know, you get the same first, 2-1, 2-2. It's the same as any other 3-year degree. So when I qualify, I'll have both the medicine degree, which would be like my MPBCH at Cardiff, and this BSc from Imperial. So that's the degree. And then number two, in terms of how can it help future prospects, I think it really depends on, one, what your aims are, and two, what course you decide to do, right? So for me, my aims, I'm very interested in health technology, in entrepreneurship, in sort of the startup side of things, in, you know, innovation and doing something to help healthcare move in the right direction. Or, you know, like, and I'm also kind of interested in content creation, which is sort of why I co-host this podcast with yourself, Matt, write my newsletter, you know, and a couple and other bits and bobs. And I feel like the management course sets me up really well to do either of those things, because the things I learn on that management course, so some of the modules I've just completed is accounting, which means I can now do basic accounting for myself, for any small business I run or any small business I work as a part of. Because, you know, if I'm working in a startup, we might not necessarily have the funds to hire an accountant, so we'll have to do the basic accounting ourselves. So I can do that. Two, I've covered like an OBHRM module, so organizational behavior and human resources management. And I think that's a fantastic skill to have, knowing how to negotiate, how to handle conflicts, how to deal with stress, how to deal with diverse teams and so on. I think that's a fantastic skill to have, and not necessarily one that's very well taught in medicine, even though we work in teams a lot of times. Currently, I'm doing global strategy, which is, again, very exciting. You know, how do you enter new markets? How do you take a product from one country to another country? Or how do you collaborate with other companies? How do you do acquisitions and so on? And all these other, these are things I feel that are essential skills. In one way or another, I feel like you need to have some sort of skill set, or at least in accounting. I think everyone needs a basic level of financial literacy, which is what we're doing here at What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us, right? That's what we're doing at Medics Money as a whole. We all need to have basic financial literacy. So there are these fantastic modules on this course. I mean, some of the other ones are health informatics, where I'm learning how to code, which is, again, I mean, in this day and age with AI and apps and all this other cool stuff, I mean, you know, if you can code your own app, or if you can just write a bit of code, it could help you so much, right? We've got also things like managing healthcare organizations and other cool modules. So it's all about, one, seeing what your aims are, like what do you see yourself doing down the line? And two, then choosing an intercalated degree, which you feel will complement those aspirations, right? So for me, the management course complements my aspirations very well. For someone else, it might be, you know, I'm really interested in cardiology. And, you know, I know a lot of people who end up doing cardiovascular sciences at Imperial. or, you know, someone might be very interested in research side of things. They might be interested in molecules and so on. So people do pharmacology, or if someone's interested in being like a neurosurgeon or a neuroscientist or so on, they end up doing neurosciences. So there's lots of options, and please do explore your opportunities and what's available. I think what was a really good website, and the one I use, is like www.intercalator.co.uk. And that page literally lists all the intercalated degrees available in the UK at that current point in time. And that's the website I used to like literally filter through everything that was available and everything I wanted to do. The final point, what's really good, is actually you can do an MSc as well. So you don't necessarily have to do a BSc, which is what I'm doing. Some universities offer MScs, which you can choose to do. Obviously, they come with a higher cost, more commitment, so on. But again, that can be funded by student finance. Plus, if you have any savings to put towards those, you know, if you've got some money, you can help yourself out. So do explore your options and don't shut intercalation off too early just because, oh, it doesn't count for points anymore. Because actually, further down the line, like when you're applying for specialty training and so on, those kinds of things might stand out. And that's where, you know, those are also bottlenecks, right? So that's where these kinds of extra things might help differentiate you from the pack and work in your favor.
Absolutely. I was listening to one of your podcasts. It's probably, it might not be out yet as the time of recording, but it was saying about creating your, I think it's creating your niche. It's like these little things differentiate you, and, you know, great, there are so many amazing talented doctors in the UK. That is what they are. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But there's these little things that differentiate. And you can, actually, you never know quite where these skills are going to come in handy, right? You said like working with diverse teams, not taught in medicine, which is a massive shame. Not taught enough, sorry. Absolutely. That is probably one of the most transferable skills in the whole of the job market, I would say. Unless you're as a sole trader or on your own. But I think it's probably still managed. It's still quite useful to have. And I was going to say, I mean, I did the same as you. When I went on the year abroad, I actually managed to do coding as well, because when I went out there, they said, look, I can't remember the exact percentage. I'm pretty sure it was 33%, basically a third of the modules you take at your host university have to be in your field. Fair enough, I suppose. And basically you get free rein after that. You can pick, basically I did Python, which I really loved doing. We had to make a Scrabble game. That was awesome. Yeah, it's cool. And then I did like history. I did a bit of like sort of Renaissance history, US history. I really just kind of explored my passions. And whereas I'm not going to say it's given me any direct benefit, you know, it's not a qualification. It's not something I can physically use in my job or life today. But I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I loved it. And explored passions that I didn't know I had, quite frankly. So
yeah,
really worth doing.
Absolutely. You're so right. And, you know, that's fantastic to hear. So I've got 2 points to, you know, complement yours, basically. And one, yeah, you're absolutely right. So creating your niche, and the phrase I like to use is creating your own category, right? And this is what's so important, is because realistically speaking, if I go ahead and become a doctor, which is fantastic, like, but at the end of the day, there will probably be another doctor that can replace me and do the same job that I can do, if not do it better, potentially in some cases, you know. I might not be the best surgeon alive. There might be other better surgeons, or, you know, so on. So what would differentiate me is all these other skills and these other things that I bring to the table, you know? So, and that's how diverse teams form. Like in a group of surgeons or in a group of doctors, everyone brings their own little thing to the team. And that's how teams excel. And that's how you as an individual also excel. You excel in your little, you know, with the skills you have. And I think that's fantastic. So, and this is what doing an intercalation or doing something outside, which is something that I talk about a lot about on the podcast that I record, is doing something outside medicine can help with, or, you know, doing or attempting at least, or, you know, just putting yourself out there at the very minimum and seeing what opportunities that that come by you and grasping those. And two, you never know when these skills come in handy. Amusingly, for my OBHRM task, we actually had to do a video recording. We had to create a video and put that in. So what came in very handy was that I could actually do some basic edits, because I've been trying to edit some videos recently and I had that skill, right? And it just helped my team. And it's fantastic because I never really thought that my video editing skills would come in handy for anything other than like these pods maybe, or YouTube videos or shorts and stuff. But I genuinely never thought it would ever come in handy for a group project, but it just did, you know? And there were marks attached. There were marks attached for creativity and things like that. So it's very important to, you know, try and get as many skills as you can and accumulate those. You don't necessarily need to be perfect at every single one, but just, you know, knowing the basics could help and take you a long way. And you never know when they might come in handy.
So we've covered really well what the benefits are of doing these intercalation years and just expanding your own skill set. But I think especially with London, me and you, perhaps, I don't think it's a new discovery, but we've perhaps, you know, we've experienced firsthand quite how different, you know, your finances can be whilst living here. It's just, it is a crazy place. So, I mean, Sunny, in terms of your strategies and your own experiences, how's the financial aspect of London been?
Yeah, I think, so, very good question. I think the financial aspect of London, when you start looking at your budget and then checking against how much you've actually spent, it hits you like a rock, if I'm totally honest. I've been budgeting a lot harder. I've been keeping a very close track, and I've been using Notion to do this. I've been keeping a very close track of my expenses every month, or every week even, actually, to be accurate. And just seeing where the money's going, what am I spending on. You know, if I've actually bought something, after having bought it, I still leave it in its packaging just to see if I actually need it or if I can return it or something, you know, to see if I can save money or if I can find a cheaper alternative like a day or two later. Because sometimes you do have that tendency to impulse buy, right? That's number one. Two, I think probably the biggest one is actually the cost of living. So I really lucked out by being able to get university accommodation, and hence my actually cost of like the rent of my flat here, the one I'm recording in right now, it's a lot cheaper than actually me trying to find a house. So I really lucked out on that. So that was probably the biggest money saver so far. I think in terms of travel, I think the tube is very expensive, I'm totally honest, and it's also very time consuming. It takes me about 45 minutes to get into uni, when it's only about 5 miles in terms of like, if I cycled or something, it would be like 5 miles. But again, cycling is also very dangerous in London. So, you know, that's got its pros and cons. But yeah, the tube is very expensive. So I used to do tube as pay as you go. However, that used to work out to about £8 a day because I used to go at peak times and I'd be traveling between zones one and zone two. Sometimes I might occasionally pop into zone three. So what I've switched to now is a travel card. And if you're a student in London, please do get the travel card. So you can get like this photo card by Oyster, I think, if most people already have it. And then on that, you can get like a monthly travel pass. And actually, it's quite surprising that so many London-based students as well don't have a travel pass, but just because simply they don't know about it. So if you don't know about it, please do get it. I highly recommend it. I did sit down and do some maths and it's definitely cheaper. So I now pay £109 per month for any travel. This includes like the river, I think there's like river boats that you can use to cross over the Thames, the buses, tubes, the night bus, everything's included. And that's £109 for any travel between zone one and zone two. And that works for me pretty well. And also, sometimes if you get lucky, especially on the Elizabeth line, you can actually nip into zone three and back, just depending on how it works. So you can do that. So it is very handy. So
I just love it. Nip into zone three. That's where I am for reference. And bless you for coming out.
But yeah, so definitely get your hands on that monthly travel pass. 100% lifesaver. And also it stops the hassle of having to top up every couple of days. Like that was also very time consuming for no reason, because the machine would be broken or there would be a long queue. It would always be one of the two. So now I just tap through and I'm off. And then I think finally, what's probably most important is food, I think as well. I think in terms of food costs, yeah, definitely try to buy as cheap as possible when you can. So I would go to the Asda that's near me, but it's also like 20 minutes away. And you know, as a student, you can't get lazy. So actually I'm quite lucky again. So when I come out of the tube station, I turn right and there's a Sainsbury local and Tesco Express right there. So I do all my shopping at the Sainsbury local because it is relatively cheaper to the Tesco. But sometimes Tesco does have really good deals on a club card. So I think it's just like, you know, if you're in that kind of situation, just evaluate which is cheaper for whatever product. And, you know, there's nothing wrong in like just crossing the road and shopping from one and then shopping from the other, right? So yeah, that's been very convenient as well. But yeah, definitely try to cook as much as you can. Meal prep. So I've been doing a lot of pasta, noodles, a lot of rice, and then rotating between those three. Not a lot of variety, but, you know, it gets the job done. What I am really bad at is making sure I have lunch. So I usually get lunch on campus. And actually, this goes against the medic's money.
I'm going to tell Tommy. He's going to spout some £139,000 of lunch at you.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, when you can, make your own lunch. Because I'm really bad at this. And I try to adhere to it as much as possible, but I'm just really bad. at cooking my own lunch. So I usually have lunch on campus and then I have dinner, home-cooked dinner, back in the flat. And obviously, you know, occasionally I'm out with friends and then I'm eating out, obviously. But I try to keep that as low as possible.
Yeah, I'd say to add on to that as well, like communal cooking is like really important. I mean, obviously, I'm going to maybe uncontroversially say that you probably won't be living alone in London unless things have gone very well somewhere along the line. And if you have the opportunity cooking with your housemates and stuff, sharing that cost is like really beneficial. Obviously, I appreciate it's not terribly easy. Sometimes you're with random people and your schedules might not align, but I'd say it's just a really good cost saver if you can. And also to tack on, this is not a very hidden tip, but it's one that I certainly didn't know before I moved here, is that even if you can't get a student travel card, which sadly I can't anymore, your Oyster card, you can link your rail card to it. So you get you get a third off your journeys, and off peak, definitely, maybe on peak as well, I'm not quite sure. But that's definitely something that helps. You can do that at any tube station. The major ones are probably better if they've got the staff for it, you know, like Waterloo, Victoria, whatever. Just something that helped me. Do you want to hear my little TFL fact as to why it's a little bit more expensive?
Yeah, go on, tell me.
I'm glad you said yes, otherwise that would be an abrupt end to the podcast. But, so basically, I learned this the other day, actually. So TFL is the organisation, for those who don't know, I'm sure most of you do, but Transport for London is the organisation that run the bus contracts, the tubes, the overground, stuff like that. It's actually, London has one of the most expensive public metro services in certainly Europe, if not the world, because it's not government funded. Now, it's got a government website, tfl.gov.uk, little plug.
Yep.
It's not government funded, at least the majority of it is private funds, which is why they charge, you know, that bit more, because they haven't got as much funding. Yeah, so we weep.
Yeah, well, students definitely weep, like myself.
It's
ridiculously expensive. I mean, I'm saying £109 a month is like a good deal, but actually, like, that's still very, very bad. I remember when I used to take the bus to school in Cardiff, and it used to be £28 for the month. £28 for the month. Or any bus, you know, jump on any bus any time of the day. And buses used to run from till like 12, like midnight, right? That's any bus good. At all. And if you wanted to add on train, it was like 52, I think, or 60 odd, depending.
Is that local services or is that between certain stations?
No, local services in the city, right? So similar to like what London is. Mm. And it'd be a lot more quicker. I could get from anywhere to anywhere in Cardiff in like 20, 30 minutes tops. Here, it's more expensive. And it also takes more time. So
yeah, it's a bit of a myth, I think, isn't it? I think a lot of people maybe assume, or at least I used to think, that it's you can get everywhere so quickly, you know, it's so well connected. And that's true. But a couple of points. A, London has blind spots. I live in one. It's just not very well connected, especially in South London, limited tubes and stuff. And B, you know, I've forgotten what the B was, but I'm sure it was insightful. Didn't you know, I've forgotten. Oh, B.
That's okay. He's remembered.
Didn't take long. B, I think people assume that it's really quick to get everywhere as well. I mean, I've got friends in North London. I'm in South London. If we went to each other's houses, it would take well over an hour, I think, because you can't always skirt around London. Sometimes you're in.
Oh, yeah. You have to go I've seen this. I think one of my friends at uni, so he lives like right across the bridge. So he lives in Battersea. So uni for us is in South Kensington, but his flat is flat. They managed to get a good deal in Battersea. There's no tube that goes over that bridge from South Kensington area, Fulham, Chelsea area to Battersea. So he has to go all the way around and then come down the other bridge. And that's just simply for that reason. It's almost sometimes quicker to walk than take the tube. Simply for that reason, you know. So he actually walks most days when he can, weather dependent. But otherwise, you know, if he takes the tube, it adds on like an extra 20, 25, 30 minutes just because he has to go around. So, yeah, both on connectivity and getting quick, it's not always possible.
No, but Battersea's a bit unfortunate. I think it's one of the newest tube stations and it's gorgeous, but it's got a weird extension on the Northern Line. This is like the most boring podcast of all time. But basically, sorry. That's all right, mate. I agree. I'm going to do it anyway. So you have to go. It's a little tax on from Kennington. So to get anywhere useful, you have to sort of change at Kennington or at least wait for a train that goes directly to Battersea, whereas most of them go all the way down to Morden. So, just stop at Kennington. So, yeah.
Basically, ideal. Don't live on the Northern Line. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I can't publicly defend the Northern Line. Privately, I might, but publicly, I can't.
Just don't live on that one, guys. You know, if you take one thing away from this podcast and you're moving to London, don't live on the Northern Line.
And that is a tip that is worth its weight in gold, I think. Sunny, sadly, London is a really expensive beast to run. It's really basically everything from the transport down to your social activities, just even meeting people for lunch, ruinous. But is there, for you, and I'm going to assume for me as well, there is an element of thought that says the expenditure is worth it just for living here, in your 20s. Is that what you kind of agree with?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And yeah, I would definitely say that coming to London and taking this year out, or even if I'd taken this year out next year after my fourth year, is definitely life-changing. I think, the people you meet are very different, in my opinion. Not just in the obvious sense, but just otherwise as well. Because I think London has that, it has that character of where it's got all the opportunities because it's like the capital of the UK. Like everything in London is just at the front. It is literally at the forefront in terms of opportunities, in terms of like the money available, in terms of, being able to do things, in terms of like the latest research, latest tech. All of those things are genuinely in London, and I wouldn't have had access to those opportunities and like that, these experiences that I'm living right now if I was in Cardiff, just because Cardiff doesn't, from a larger sense of view, larger point of view, it just doesn't have those capabilities that London does. So definitely, I think there is an element, or I totally agree, the expenses are very well justified, the living costs and so on, that's okay. And as long as, you make the most of your opportunities and you make the most of your experiences and you make the most of your time here. So actually, most days I end up working with friends in the library, and I usually come back to my room to literally sleep. I'm actually not in my room that often. I'm out most days. I'm on campus from about nine till seven, I would probably say, 9 till 8. Come back, just eat. Maybe, if friends want to play some games on console or PC or something, do a bit of that, still with friends, and then kind of just turn in for the night, go again, repeat. So I'm actually not even here. I'm trying to make the most of the... And if you do that, I think London is very well justified, especially in your 20s. I think that's when you're really trying to build yourself, gain skills, diversify, and, get all these experiences. And I think a book I'd really like to recommend is Die With Zero by Bill Perkins. And it tells, or explains rather, the fact that actually over time, for most people, fortunately, your earning capacity will increase. And for that very reason, you don't necessarily need to forsake things now just because it feels like a very big amount to you. But actually, what would you or we as individuals and humans would probably value more of those experiences? So if I forsake going to an event today with my friend, that means I won't ever have that event experience with him, which then we won't be able to talk about. And if I did that event later down the line, like 20 years down the line, that's 20 years less that we can talk about that event. So it's all about, experiences and memories. That's, at the end of the day, that's what truly matters. And if you can do that now, then you should do it. And you should not necessarily worry about it unless, you've got financial reasons, or, you've genuinely got extenuating circumstances, which mean that you do have to worry, which I think Bert Matt and I would completely understand. But if you can, then 100% do grasp any opportunities, any experiences that you can, and make the most of it. Because in the long run, you'll 100% feel worth it. Like, it was worth it, because I genuinely do.
Absolutely. I mean, we obviously preach a lot of medics money and what medical school doesn't teach us about taking care of your finances, budgeting, getting the small stuff right. I will say, though, if you are able, there are more important things in life than making sure you save every single penny that you can. Now, it's important, definitely just make sure you do make provision for it, but especially in these, I'm in my 20s as well, this period of my life doesn't feel like it should be, what's the right word, scrimped on. I don't want to have to withhold myself because I'm worried about saving for a house. Now I'm trying to, as I'm sure a lot of people in my position are, successfully or unsuccessfully, but I don't want to look back at my time in London, in this amazing city, and be like, oh, I'm so glad I, didn't go out for dinner that night. I'm so glad I got that 30 quid or whatever. Mm. So, yeah, I'd say just...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I completely agree. There have been times where I've been like, okay, well, financially, I should probably not go and do this. I normally overrule myself and think, well, you know, there'll be time for that later. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's so important if you are in a city, and this doesn't even have to be London, you know, for you, it could potentially be going from like Cardiff to like Bath or Bristol, you know, just if you move cities and, you know, if it's more expensive or even in some cases less expensive, then I mean, that's great, but don't, I think there's a time and place for saving, which is what, you know, we talk a lot about on Medics Money and what medical school doesn't teach us. And, you know, there's a time and place for that. But at the same time, I think everyone on the team realizes that there is a time and place for it, and that at times that, you know, it is completely justifiable to not need to save or to not have to save, and, you know, giving yourself that freedom. I think saving shouldn't necessarily be a restriction. It should just be something that, you know, you're aware of and you're like, okay, I'm working towards that goal, so I'm going to work towards that goal, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to sacrifice everything today. Maybe you don't eat out one day because, you know, maybe instead of, you know, your friends are all getting burritos and you didn't get a burrito because it's like, you know, that's fine. That's not like the end of the world. But say your friends are all going on holiday and you're like, okay, I'm not going to go on that holiday because I need to save it for the house, in Matt's case. Then maybe you can consider, like, you know, do you actually need, like, you know, maybe you can go on that holiday. Maybe you can save in other ways. So it's always looking at it from different perspectives and just making sure that you do what's best for you. And yeah, making the most of your time.
I agree, mate. I agree. Time is the one thing we can't buy. You know, it's a resource that is sadly all too short. And yeah, maximizing that. And also, I guess I just want to say, not advice or anything, but sometimes in your own personal circumstances, what is the most financially astute and sound decision doesn't necessarily align with what you want out of life and what you want to do.
Yeah, 100%. So, well, very well said, Matt. I think that's perfectly put, and I couldn't have put it better myself. I think that's so true. And, you know, that's, honestly speaking, that's what I've been trying to do at London. So, you know, while I do have been saying, like, I've been budgeting very hard and, you know, I've been tracking things. Yeah, I have. I'm not going to lie, I have. And, you know, I am spending a lot more than I would be in Cardiff, 100%. However, you know, what that has meant is I've been able to go for dinner with a lot of different people. I mean, Matt, you and I have met up for lunch, which, you know, if I decided to save that money, we wouldn't have been able to. You know, I've met up with friends that I haven't seen in years, almost. I now regularly meet up with lots of people. I'm traveling all over the city, exploring, trying out the new things. I think I've been to like 7 or 8 different restaurants in like the last 6 weeks, just because I want to try them out. My friends want to try them out. You know, Matt, you and I went to a new one, right?
So oh, great.
I've been making the most of my time here, and actually that's okay because I know I'm only here for a year. And like you said, time can be bought back. I'm not going to get this year back again when I'm 21. I'm not going to get that year back in London, right? And I'm trying to just make them, I'm literally trying to cram my days with as much excitement as I possibly can. I'm not even joking. Like, I'm just trying to make the most of it while I'm here. All I want to do is just enjoy the city. And, you know, I want to enjoy absolutely everything it offers, everything it can do for me and everything I can do for it. You know, and it's honestly a great feeling because I've never gone away on one of these dinners and come out regretting being like, I'm so happy I met that person, drop them a text, and I'm like, when are you free next? You know, that was so great, thank you for coming out. And that's made them smile, that's made me smile, come out from a lovely evening caught up after not having spoken for years. And it's fantastic. It's honestly fantastic, like the feeling you'll get after doing things like that, it's great. So yeah, So I'm so happy we've touched on this point. I think it's so important. And I think more people need to be made aware that it's okay. In some cases, you know, it's justifiable to be spending money. Oh, that's very wholesome. Very wholesome.
It's very wholesome. I think, well done us. Thanks so much for joining me, Sally. And thanks for talking all about intercalating and your own experiences. Hope you've had a good time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt, for having me on. I mean, it feels really weird to be on the other side of the table, but I must say you've done a good job hosting today.
Oh, thank you very much. Hopefully have you on again soon. And just a general final announcement. Thanks so much for listening to What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to get our ebook, head on over to medicsmoney.co.uk/MSTTU and check out our socials as well. I think we're pretty live on Instagram quite a lot of the time. So follow us there. I believe our handle's at WMSTTU. The links will be in the description below. So check us out there.
And yes, I would like to confirm that our social handle on Instagram is WMSDTU.
That like a pro. Amazing. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.